When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for tuning in to the latest episode of Plugged In, a Post Media podcast taking you down Canada's electric vehicle highway. I'm your host, Andrew McCready. We're midway through season 6, so it's time to check in with a favorite of ours, EV expert Ken Bacor. Ken is the Toronto-based host of the EV Revolution show on YouTube and is a member of the Automotive Journalists Association of Canada. He's been part of every season of Plugged In, sharing his views and knowledge on notable all-electric vehicles coming to Canadian showrooms. In doing research for this show, I was reminded how far along we are in terms of the EV revolution. When Ken appeared on the first season, we had but a handful of new EVs to talk about, and some of those were still a year or so away from being available. For today's show, I stopped counting at 30 all-new EVs either just arrived or coming in the next 12 months. And that is just from mainstream global automakers. Well, it's great to have you back on the show, Ken.
Thank you very much for having me, and congrats on 6 seasons.
Thank you. Well, you've been part of all of them, so part of the credit certainly goes to you and what you have always brought to the table. So the last time I saw you was at the Fully Charged show in my hometown of Vancouver when we were co-panelists on one of the many great discussions they held over 3 days. It was a great event, and I'm really pleased it will be coming back next year. Better still, I've just learned that you will be playing a much bigger role than just a panelist and participant. You have just taken on the job of Sales Director of Canada for Fully Charged, which, given your trade show experience and your expertise on the electric vehicle revolution, it's a perfect fit. Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So, I mean, I know it's a new role for you, but you and I discussed the show after it, and what will participants or not even participants, but attendees maybe see what will be a little different in the 2024 show than the inaugural show?
Yeah, what I can say is that it's going to be bigger. So we're looking to take more space within the Vancouver Convention Center. Certainly trying to get a fullest plate as we can of the OEMs and the auto manufacturers out there to talk about their electrified portfolio with some of the other ecosystem organizations. And as you know, Fully Charged is not just about EV autos at all. They do other stuff, sustainable energy and, you know, other green type of technologies. So branching out into some more of that.
Yeah, and I know you've been a participant over the years at a number of shows. So how did the Vancouver show, in your estimation, kind of compare to the ones you've been at previously?
I think it was great. It was their largest opening of any city that since they started doing the live series. As far as the number of attendees for over a weekend. So they were very happy with that. It just shows that the energy, the vibe, the mindset, you know, the culture in the West Coast is at least open to exploring the ideas of electrification and sustainable energy and other things of green things that we can do in our lifestyles. So I think that was very well received, and they were extremely encouraged by that turnout and just the interaction between the audiences. You mentioned the panels. They were all well attended, lots of good questions, a lot of interaction, a lot of people having discussions. And that's kind of what gets things going.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like a TED Talks of sustainability. Mm-hmm. The quality of the panelists was outstanding. And, you know, I talked with some of the attendees, and they actually came every day. They came for 3 days.
That's right.
Simply to sit in on these free panels and, you know, learn all kinds of things. So it's almost like you almost get a 1 year university education on sustainability just by listening to these panels.
Yeah, and that's really one of their other value adds. It's not just like a car show where you see things and you can talk to people about products, but the learning aspect and the knowledge transfer aspect is huge for them. That's really where they come from, is the ability to educate and create awareness for people on many different elements in that ecosystem that they focus on. And that's really kind of, I think, the difference between something like a Fully Charged Live conference and another EV or green energy conference would do. Is lots more education there.
Yeah, it's like a hybrid auto show of sorts. And it was also great for me for content, because last week on my podcast, or the last episode, I had a gentleman who had just launched his business who had a booth at the show. That was Blossom EV. So, you know, it was great to meet Kevin there. And then to have him on the show last week was great. And he said the same thing, that the show really, he was astounded at how many signups he got from the show. So I think you're right. I think in Vancouver on the West Coast here, there's kind of a thirst for knowledge about this this stuff, and everything from heat pumps to an electric vehicle. So can't wait for the show next year.
Should be good.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I always have you on because you have such a great research base of new vehicles coming. But before we jump into that, I'd like to get your learned opinion on what some automotive observers are calling the stalling of the EV revolution. I mean, this has been the talk in the last few weeks, with US automakers dialing back production. New EVs aren't selling according to some, and inventory is backing up at US dealers. Is this kind of the typical overreaction that we see that plagues the EV sector, both pro and con? I mean, it just seems like it's the sky is falling and then suddenly everything is going to be faster than we thought. Obviously, the truth lies somewhere in between. So shed some light on what's going on.
The truth is out there, that's for sure. No, you know, if the market is stalling, then how come I'm so busy and you're so busy? I mean, it's not impacting us. You know, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of things at play here. And I think, you know, the media tends to focus on stuff that's going to get clicks and page turns and things like that. So, you know, a little bit more of a negative slant on things sometimes will draw more eyeballs to things. So that's just human nature. But, you know, the reality is, if we just take a step back to high level, you know, if you look at the light duty vehicle market, and that includes all consumer vehicles, internal combustion, EV, whatever, in the world last year, it's about 67 million. And that was only up about not even 1% from the year before, because the market had actually gone down during COVID, obviously. So it's starting to slowly rebound. Out of that, though, in 2022, the global plug-in market, so any vehicle that has a plug, be it PHEV or battery electric hybrid, or in some cases even hydrogen, battery electric vehicle, then that was finished at 10.2 million, which was at 14% market share. So, and that was up from 4 million the year before, so significant growth from 2021. Looking at this year's numbers, though, if everything is doom and gloom, I mean, we're seeing continued growth in both markets. In fact, the auto industry in general is going to be up probably around 20-22% by the time the year is done. They're estimating LDVs to be around 85-86 million, so that'd be up from 67 million. And the plug-in light duty vehicle market is going to go up about 40%, because we're going to go from about 10 to maybe 14 to 15 million this year, depending on how things and the dust settles. And that would be a 16% market share. So if the EV revolution is slowing, then why is the market share and the numbers increasing for EV sales?
Yeah. Well, this is why I love to have you on the show, Ken, because you bring hard data to the table, which really...
I try my best.
Yeah, it really kind of dispels this overreaction. But as you say, hot takes and is kind of what is driving so much of our conversation. Much to the detriment of the truth, I guess, or real information.
Absolutely. And I wanted to add, so, you know, but there is obviously slowdowns in various areas, and those areas could be as small as a city, or it could be as small as a region or country. It can be very varied. And there are some things that are slowing the EV market down in a general momentum, even though we're seeing this small increase. You know, there's a lot of people that are still unfamiliar with EVs, right? What you do in your education through the podcast and your writings, you know, to try to get consumers educated with EVs, what I do. But even with that, there's you know, probably 7 out of 10 really have no idea what an EV could do for them or how they work, what they're about. There's still this lingering concern of range. You know, we talked about range anxiety till we're blue in the face, but that's still a real thing for a lot of people, not as many as it was before. But again, part of that education will help to deter the concerns about range anxiety, you know, and also charging networks. We know that there are gaps still. In Canada, there are some large swaths of area where it's going to be really hard to find a charge anywhere. So, having an education and a sense of awareness of where this infrastructure is and how it could work for a consumer in their need is definitely something that consumers have to do. And also, you know, we've hit that point in the S-curve where we're kind of going into the second phase of it, because all the early adopters have come out and have done their things. They've purchased products. You know, you're an early adopter, right? You had a Nissan Leaf way back when. So, you know, they've all done these things. And now we're kind of waiting for the rest of the general market to start getting more aggressive into EV purchases. And of course, the last kicker to anything really is the current economic state of various regions. You know, Canada, we're in a mild recession. Interest rates are, you know, probably, what, 5% higher than they were a year and a half ago or something like that. That's a huge pill for people to swallow, to look at a $50,000 or $60,000 EV at a 7.5% to 8% interest rate, where it was 1.5% to 2.5% not too long ago. So these are all factors that contribute to a somewhat perceived slowing market. But the numbers at the end of the day overall will still be very positive, if that all makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And I'm glad you mentioned the part about this the early adopters all now having an EV in their driveway, or you know, they own one. Now it gets difficult, right? Now you're kind of hitting the headwinds of skepticism, of convincing people that aren't maybe interested in technology to switch from something they've known all their lives. And that's, I think, I mean, in when I said, you know, this kind of overreaction pro and con, you know, there are some EV observers that just kind of say, you know, when we hit this tipping point, it's just going to skyrocket. I think it's going to flatten for the next 5 or 6 years, simply be, not flatten, but a very small grade, just because convincing these people and getting them into these cars is really going to be the challenge for automakers now.
You're 100% correct. I think that this adoption curve is going to continue to increase, but not in these hockey stick type of scenarios where we're going to see double or tripling, whatever. You know, it'll continue to go as the EV, as the automakers develop and produce and sell more EVs, that will take away from that overall light duty vehicle market. It'll bite into that ICE vehicle market and slowly start, you know, adding more EVs and less ICE vehicles. That's kind of how we'll see things going. But, you know, if we're only doing 10 plus million EVs plug-ins today globally, and there's 85, that means that there's a 75 million, you know, unit market to go after for EVs. Nobody's building 75 million in the next foreseeable future, you know. So this is a decades long, adoption curve, if you want to say. It's not going to happen as fast as a lot of people think. So that's definitely for sure. And you know, I guess one other thing to add to this is, you know, we have heard of some production slowdowns from OEMs this year, like General Motors, as an example, who have really pulled in the reins. You know, they've been beating their horse saying 2030, 2030, 2035, we're all in now. We're all in, but it's going to take us a little longer. So we're going to slow things down and retool. We've got to reinvest. They're all coming off of the big UAW and some of the Canadian strike stuff. So that's impacted their business, which will take them months and months to recover from that, if not a year. So there's a lot of other factors that aren't necessarily EV specific factors that are potentially slowing down the market for area. So GM, of course, they're not going to have the number of EVs out in production that they originally forecasted not too long ago for next year.
Right, right. Well, I mean, that kind of is a great segue into what, you know, the meat of our discussion today, and that's kind of the new vehicles coming. As I mentioned in the introduction, I kind of had to laugh that, you know, when we first did this first season, I think there were 4 or 5 EVs that we could talk about, and even those might not be coming for 3 years. So I just did a little research here, and there's over 30. I mean, I kind of lost count at 30. So not to put you on the spot, but give me 3 that you're kind of excited about. I mean, there's so many. There's pickup trucks, there's sports cars, there's every segment filled out. But which ones do you think listeners might really be interested in?
You know, it's a great question, because I actually highlighted 3 to 5. So I'll fit right into the answer. You know, I'm gonna start with the elephant in the room, which is the Tesla Cybertruck, because there's been so much momentum and hoopla about this truck, and it does seem like they're finally getting to, they're having first customer deliveries, or so they claim, at the end of this month in November 2023. So which means they'll start getting into limited production runs for 2024. If what they have, they if in fact they have this 2 million reservation list, there's going to be a lot of people waiting several years for a Cybertruck as they only build 100,000, maybe 150,000 to 200,000 a year to chunk through that. But that's a game changer because it's so different, right? People are going to see these on the street and go, what the heck? Are they filming a sci-fi movie here? What's going on? So that, I think, is going to get a lot of buzz next year. And as it should, it's going to help to continue to stimulate, I think, the market. Maybe good and bad, we'll have to wait and see. But I think it'll be a good vehicle. So there's that one that's going to be an impactful vehicle. If I'm sticking to the larger vehicles, I really think the star of the bell of the ball next year is going to be Kia with their EV9. The people are hammering and clamoring and really want these larger three-row SUVs. Families are becoming much more larger, much more integrated, much more, you know, seniors are staying at home with their kids as opposed to going somewhere else, retiring in Florida or whatever. So the need for some of these larger vehicles are there. And I think that Kia has come out with a fantastic product, not because Kia has been doing things really well, they have, but the price point on this, by what I've seen both in Canada and the US, is so attractive when you compare it to the luxury three rows that are out there. They're going to carve away a nice niche. And I think that that's one that's going to make a huge impact on the North American market space for 2024. And then I would say, kind of going down the line, you know, the Volvo with their EX30, I mean, in Canada, it might be slightly different, but in the US, at that $35,000 entry point for a well-equipped, you know, not too big, like it's a small SUV, a really small SUV, and we need more of these four-door compact kind of hatchback vehicles that can do things with, you know, good charging, good range. I think that's going to really, you know, set the wheels in motion for the market here in North America. I'm not sure why our Canadian price point is so high, why it's 53,000 here in Canada versus 35 in the US. I don't understand that point. But still, 53 after incentives, you're into it for the 40,000s or even less on a capable vehicle. And that also is a deeper penetration for the Chinese-built vehicles, because that's something that is kind of coming in under the radar. Of course, Geely own Volvo and Polestar, so they're building vehicles there. So those are kind of the initial three that stick out for me.
Okay, let's take a break there. And when we come back, we'll talk to Ken about some more new vehicles coming. Okay, we're back. So just before the break, Ken was discussing or talking about the Volvo EX30. I actually drove that car a couple of weeks ago in Europe for the global launch. As Ken said, it is an outstanding vehicle. It is a blast to drive. It's got a great powertrain. And as he also said, the pricing is out of whack when it comes to the States. My feeling is maybe they're just trying to sell more in the States. Maybe they're trying to make it an impact vehicle with a much lower margin for them, just to see if they can get traction. One thing I can say, though, at the price in Canada, it's a luxury vehicle. I mean, it's a luxury segment vehicle. It's a Volvo. So, you know, there's many cars that are from your, you know, the GMs of the world and the Hondas and the Mazdas and the Toyotas that aren't luxury vehicles that kind of have the same price point or very similar. So that's something to keep in mind with the Volvo. What do you think about that, Ken?
You're absolutely correct. They are a luxury brand. Now, the EX30 is taking more of the minimalistic approach to things. So a very simplified single screen, right? A lot of use of sustainable materials, which I like in that. So, you know, they are kind of funking it up a little bit more to get more mainstream there. But it does still have that high-end build quality and that luxury, you know, a nice ride. It's quiet, it's comfortable, easy to drive. So they're keeping all those metrics with that vehicle.
Right. And as you mentioned with the Kia EV9, the real appeal of that is the price, but also the third row. The first EV or the first non-luxury EV to come to North America that is three rows. Speaking of Volvo, they have their EX90, which is coming very soon, also 2024 model, and that will be three rows. But again, luxury vehicle. So I'm sure the pricing will be higher than the Kia, but it's great to see that segment started, you know, continuing to fill out.
And I would just add to that, Andrew, that it's a usable three row, because I've squeezed myself into some other three rows and I'm going, I couldn't do this every day. No way. So, but that one is not too bad at all.
Yeah. And again, the you know, the flat bottom architecture of EVs really lends itself to, you know, huge cabins. And that's so apparent when you get in these three row ones now. Okay, let's. You mentioned that you had five that you had kind of shortlisted. You've given us three. What are the other two?
Yeah, so I would say the other couple are BMW's i5. I'm really excited about that vehicle because that's a sweet spot for BMW. Boy, their 5 Series is just a flagship, you know, out of their model line. Yeah, there might be more threes floating around, but golly, you know, if you get into a 5, they have such a loyal following of clients that stay with them for years and years and decades. It's such a good vehicle, and I'll be getting my hands on one in a couple of weeks to drive for a week. I'm super excited about that, but the early reviews are all very positive on that. BMW is doing great things with their electrification, and I fully expect the i5. It seems to be priced aggressively enough against the likes of the Model S, the Lucid Airs, these kind of, you know, mid to large size sedans. I think they're going to do very well. It'll be a very competent vehicle, and I think that's going to help them solidify their owner base to making the move to electrified transportation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Again, I was in Europe a few weeks before that, before I drove the Volvo and drove the i5 in Portugal, and it was stunning. It, as you say, the 5 Series traditionally has been such an aspirational vehicle for people. So it was a, you know, you could have, BMW really had to tread lightly electrifying that series, but as they proved with the 7 Series, they can do it. And what I found interesting is that the i5 looks very much inside and out as the gas-powered 5 Series. That's a philosophy BMW has taken with their big sedans, the i7. You can walk into a BMW dealership and you can buy a 7 Series, and then you just choose what kind of electric or what kind of power plant you want. You can get gasoline or electric. Mercedes, on the other hand, has kind of taken the other approach with their EQ line, which I won't say they don't look like Mercedes, but they're a little different. And I read a fascinating article in Automotive News recently, the American Automotive News, about how those cars aren't selling very well, the EQs. And one Mercedes dealer was quoted as saying they don't have the lust factor. They don't have the, they look like EVs. So it made me realize that maybe the BMWs and have a better idea of what they're doing, because they're maintaining the kind of status and the lust factor of their vehicle, and but just offering you a different power plant. So I think there's some real insight in there.
Great observations. You know, Audi does the same thing, maintaining that look. You know, whether it's a gas powered or an e-tron, it's sometimes it's hard to change. They do some little tweaks, but certainly I think that has a big motivation into consumer choice. Absolutely.
Right. And Porsche, the Macan EV is coming out, and I was at their factory in Leipzig a little while ago, and on the line literally is the electric Macan, and then all of a sudden comes a gas powered one on the exact same line. So, and it very, very similar looking. So again, that's an interesting philosophy, the luxury makers, this whole idea of maintaining the lust factor. I think that's, it'll be interesting to see if Mercedes pivots from their philosophy and maybe goes back to just taking their beautiful 7 Series or S Series or S Class and making that an electric instead of trying to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, we'll have to see. That's a great observation and a great point. The other one or two I was going to throw into this early mix was the Honda Acura ZDX or ZDX, depending on what side of the border you're on. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because, you know, we've been bashing Honda for not getting into the electrification game a lot quicker. Yes, they've had the Honda E out in Europe for a couple of years now, but it really is still an urban type of mobility vehicle. It's a little expensive for what you get from a range charging perspective, you know, based on what we're seeing today as the new standard. But nonetheless, I know a few owners in the UK that message me and tell me their stories all the time, and they absolutely love the vehicle. But, you know, in North America, there hasn't been anything Honda versus other than the Clarity. So I'm really hoping that the Acura ZDX that's coming next year will make an impact for them. Again, midsize SUV, you know, no surprise there. But it doesn't, you know, the early looks doesn't show that it's an EV. Like, it just looks like a normal, you know, nicely futurized Acura product, and Honda has a big following, so I'm really hope that this is going to help to open the electrification consumer minds for Honda.
Yeah, talking about a segment, let's say the pickup truck segment. Everybody, we waited so long for the Ford F-150 Lightning to come along. It's now out there. I see them driving around my neighborhood all the time. There's a lot of pickup trucks coming, as you said, GM has kind of slowed things down, but just looking at the list, there's the Chevrolet Equinox EV, the Chevrolet Silverado EV, the what else do we have? We have the Ram 1500 EV, the Toyota Tacoma EV. So in within a year, pickup truck owners or wannabe owners are going to have a half dozen, or and throw Rivian in there. I mean, suddenly that segment's going to be very crowded and very competitive.
Absolutely, as it should be. EVs have a great operational story for that marketplace. They can tow, they can pull, they can carry things. They're quiet, they're reliable. Yeah, you lose some range if you're towing 6, 7, 8,000 pounds, but nonetheless, you can get the job done. So, it's a great observation as well that that market's going to expand. I would just be a little susceptible to the actual, when we're going to start seeing enough quantities that make sense. As I said earlier about GM backing off some of their numbers, I think we'll see the Silverado and the Sierra version, the higher end version of that, delayed somewhat. I think we'll start seeing them, but just like the Blazer, there's only a handful that are out there. You see a few reviews and a few at dealers, but it hasn't made the impact that it's supposed to. And I am disappointed that the Equinox hasn't come out in full force, because to me that was really a potential strength move by GM to capture that mass market entry point at that 35,000 Canadian, which is what they originally advertised. So GM, I would just be a little careful on the numbers. I think the products are all going to be wonderful, don't get me wrong, but just as far as the timing and when some decent numbers are coming, I think these delays are going to kind of stretch things out a little longer than some people think. But you're right. Just the sheer volume of EVs as a selection for consumers is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, one of your top picks in the in a recent I think it was last year's show was the Chevy Blazer EV. You were really high on that one. And is that one that is going to be stalled also, or are we going to see that sooner rather than later?
I think so. My EV of the year actually was the Equinox, mainly because of that price point, right? Because they're coming out at 30 US, 35 Canadian. Now they've raised it a little bit, so they're going to inch it up. It might be 39.9 or 40, whatever. But still, as a mass market capable vehicle, that'll give you 380, 400 kilometers, 20 to 30% rapid charging on your road trip to 80. Those are respectable numbers that can really move the yardsticks a lot more forward in a faster method, because it opens it up to a better price point. Factor in, $5,000 incentives or others in, the provincial ones in some of the other provinces where people are. You can really get these things into the $20,000 range, 28 or something. So that is what was my hope for the Equinox, but because it's been delayed, and I don't know how much quantities we'll see. That's my only concern. If they came out and built, they could, in my opinion, they could build 500,000 of these and sell them all. That's how good I think they are. But we're not going to see those kind of numbers from, we'll be lucky to, I think, to see 500,000 total production from them next year across all their electrified platforms. I'd
From
love to
General
see more
Motors.
from General Motors. And
Yeah.
this is a company that could do triple that easy,
Right,
right?
right.
Tesla's pushing 2 million soon. They could easily be one of the main players. But, I don't know. We're going to have to push back and see if they got likes like Toyota. You mentioned the Tacoma EV, great products. Toyota's done a 180, right? They're now electrifying. They're getting into the battery only, the larger PEVs. So I think that that's going to be a strong product. Tacoma is a great product, and it's, a lot of people are asking for that mid-size kind of pickup versus the big, large ones.
Yeah, an extremely loyal following, especially out here in British Columbia. I mean, if you're a mountain biker or backcountry, the Tacoma just dominates that sector.
Absolutely.
Speaking of GM too, I mean, we talked about Chevrolet, but they've also the Buick Electra is one, the GMC Sierra. So you're right, there's more than half a dozen GM EVs that are kind of scheduled for 2024, but with the recent announcement, who knows when we're going to see those.
Yeah, the key will just be the
Last,
quantity.
sorry.
Sorry, I was
Yeah.
just going to say the key will be what they can actually put together and get out the door.
Yeah, and to see where they're going to what vehicle they'll prioritize to do that with. Okay, so you and I are going to see each other on November 16th in Los Angeles at the annual Los Angeles Auto Show. This will be the last one we can talk about. The
Yes.
Lucid Gravity.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Lucid Air is an incredible car, beautiful design, beautiful drivability. Huge sticker price, but what is the how is the I mean that's a sedan. What are we going to see in the Gravity?
Well, I believe it's going to be an SUV product of sort from them. Again, not a surprise. Everybody and their brother is building an SUV now because that's the hot market space. So, we'll see something that's very capable. My only concern about Lucid, to be frank, is I think their products are solid. They have some really cool engineered technology that they've patented in their packs and their power delivery mechanisms, their motors. They've announced just the other day that they're switching to NACS standard as well, I believe, starting in 2025. So great, everybody's getting into that, and that makes sense. My only concern with them is that, they're having still some cash flow issues as they try to continue to ramp up production and sell more. And to add another vehicle, trim or model to the lineup when they're still kind of trying to wrestle with what they have, I think the timing is a little off, personally. That's my thought for that. Now, I think the lifeline for them is that they have Saudi-backed money, and it doesn't
Yes.
seem to be an end of the bag. The bag just keeps filling up. There's no end to it. So, maybe I'm just talking smoke, but I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I did have an opportunity to drive an Air recently at an Ajax event here north of Toronto a couple of weeks ago. And you're right, it's a very capable, very nice vehicle. They've dropped their price point too now to compete with the likes of the Model S's and some of the others that are competitively priced, lowering their price. Like 99.9 is a lot of money in Canada, but gee, these things used to be 130, 140,000. So there's a big price drop to try to get consumers enticed to buy these luxury sedans. And they're still trying to carve out their niche. So I don't know how big this splash the gravity is going to make. I think it's going to get a lot of ooh and ahs, and people are going to go great. But then again, the reality is, how when are they going to be able to crank these out? Are they going to be able to offer at a price that's somewhat affordable? Because as you know, the SUV market is really, really congested. We didn't even talk about the Polestar 3, and then now their new Polestar 4 with no rear window. I don't know how that's going to work with just a camera, but hey, the future is here. So, it's a very congested marketplace, so I'm not sure how they're going to do.
And we didn't talk about the Mercedes-Benz EQG, which
We did not.
unlike what I said about how Mercedes is making their EVs very kind of EV-like, the G is the G-Wagon, and it is square. It's very traditional in the way it looks, exactly like the gas-powered historic G-Wagon. So there's another one that is going to be capturing attention. So like you say, the gravity is entering a crowded and very kind of enticing market.
And that G-Wagon has such a staunch following though, right? Because it's a very expensive vehicle, so it's very up there. But these things are tough, and they're built, and a lot they're used for a lot of high-end applications. So I can certainly see the use case for that, but again, don't expect it to make a huge mass market impact.
A lot's coming. So it's always great to have you on the show, Ken. And I can't wait to see how your influence and connections impact next year's Fully Charged show in Vancouver.
Thank you for that. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, and I look forward to seeing you in a week or so.
And IU. Ken Bocora is the Toronto-based host of the EV Revolution show on YouTube and is a member of the Automotive Journalists Association of Canada. There certainly is no lack of choice when it comes to selecting a new electric vehicle. And while the vast majority are sport utility vehicles, as Ken pointed out, segments like pickup trucks and smaller vehicles are starting to be better represented with EVs. One of the upsides of dealers having new EVs on their lots, as opposed to lengthy waiting lists that has been the case for the past few years, is that you can actually get behind the wheel and do a good old-fashioned test drive. As I've always said, if you have never driven or been driven in an electric vehicle, the experience is one you'll remember for a long time. That's it for this episode. Thanks very much to my guest, Ken Bocor, my exceptional producer, Adam Foster, and you for joining me on another electrifying journey down the EV highway. For your dose of all things automotive, including up-to-date information on new EVs in Canada, be sure to check out driving.ca, where you'll find the best in breaking news, videos, and reviews. And be sure to subscribe to Plugged In wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. That way you'll never miss an episode, and you'll also be able to listen to past episodes. And also check out the other three great driving.ca podcasts, the Driving Podcast, Truck Guy, and the Motormouth Podcast. As always, thanks for listening.